This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Prepared for the March 15th, 2016 Commission meeting. Four of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 14 of the contacts involved electric service, 5 contacts related to natural gas service, 1 contact was related to wireless service, 5 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, and 13 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. We still have 2 complaints open from 2014, and 300 of the 315 complaints received in 2016 have been resolved.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Hearing none, Deb, thanks. Brings us to the first docket item, which is EL 16-003, in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corporation doing business as Northwestern Energy for approval of a contract with deviations. We will turn to Northwestern. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Jeff Decker with Northwestern Energy. In this docket, we're requesting a contract with deviation for the Dakota Access Pipeline rate. And there's really 3 areas that we're looking for a deviation for this morning. First of all, we have asked that we have a letter of credit to support the construction and capacity costs provided by the company, which they have done in this project. Also, we have proposed take or pay provisions to cover those costs so that the legacy customers are protected, so that in the event that the project would not go through or come to completion, that those customers are protected from the costs of this project. Thirdly, we are proposing to serve the customer under the pre-rate case Rate 34 rates. Rate 34 is the large industrial rate, and it is a load factor based rate, meaning the better the load factor, the lower the rate. So customers with a good load factor are rewarded. Also, this particular customer, even under those discounted rates for 3 years, which is our proposal, provides a significant margin impact to the service, to the electrical system as a whole. And I think we have demonstrated that in several of the exhibits that we've provided, that they do make a significant contribution to the system. I guess I'll just stop there and we'll respond to your questions. I don't know what your questions are, so I'll follow you.
You know, let me, you can go ahead and just stick tight there. I'm going to go to staff first.
Thank you, Chairman Nelson. This is Lorena Reichert of staff. We filed a memo on March 28th, and I will simply refer to that and recommend approval. Staff, including Eric Paulson and Patrick Stephenson, are available for any questions.
Thank you. And Dakota Access is not an intervener or party in this docket, but they do have somebody on the phone line. Mr. Hayes, is there anything that you want to add? Or are you just available? Oh, and you've got attorneys in the room that are coming forward. So, Dakota Access, anything that you want to add at this point?
No, Commissioner. This is Kara Semler for Dakota Access. You're right. We're not a party to this. However, wanted to be here in case there were questions we could help answer.
Excellent. Thank you. With that, questions from the commission. Mr. Decker, you mentioned that with this contract for deviations that it would provide Northwestern with a, I think you used the word significant margin. What is the difference between that margin and the margin that would be obtained if this contract were not in place?
Confidential 2-4, I think, provides that. We showed under varying load factor percentages the old rates as well as the new rates. And there is a line on there called contribution to A&G and plant. And on that exhibit, you'll be able to see the differences.
Thank you. I have no further questions. Other commissioner questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we look at this and we look at the statute, you certainly have to display a public interest for this. I understand the negotiations was before the rate case. And so that was an agreement between you and Dakota or Northwestern leadership, I guess, and Dakota Access. But you also need to justify the public interest. I saw very vague information on justification. Could you verbally tell me the justification for the contract of deviation, especially for our ratepayers?
Okay. I was looking through some older information yesterday to try to put a timeline together, remind myself of everything that took place. Ironically, what I came across was a memo dated December 19th, 2014. And on that day, we provided a memo which gave a high-level proposal of what the average rate would be under Rate 34 at that point in time. Now, in that memo, we also referenced that earlier that day, we had filed a rate case, electric rate case, with the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. So, at the same time, we are competing with another provider to gain a customer. We are not able to give them rate certainty because we've just filed a rate case, not knowing how long it's going to take for that rate case to be final. We had no idea what number to give them, you know, as far as what would be the outcome. So we got to thinking about it after sending that memo and said, number one, you know, I look at this a lot like buying a piece of land. You get a one-time chance to buy that piece of land in a lifetime. This is a one-time chance to serve this customer. And so we wanted to put forth the best number we could. And like buying land, you've still got to make money. We still wanted to make money. And in the exhibit, we show that we're still making money. But to continue to answer your question, we needed to provide rate certainty for them, which that's why we're proposing the three-year discount for them. In addition, it was simply an incentive to help them to choose Northwestern as opposed to the alternative provider. Again, it's competition in that situation. We wanted to put forth an effort to gain that customer, knowing that even if we give up a little margin for 3 years, and all the years after those 3 years, there's significant margin there to contribute to the system to help all the other customers, whether it's in future rate cases or whatever the case may be. This customer, definitely a contributor to our system and to the cost of the system. So bottom line, yes, we're giving up some margin for 3 years, but it's for the hope of gaining margin for not eternity, but for a very long time.
And I think your ending statements clarified that. But just to clarify for the record and the public, until you have another rate case, this is a shareholder deal. So the shareholders get the income. And so if you want to give a lower rate for economic development or et cetera, that is not a ratepayer issue. You as management decided that as the shareholder's interest because you're getting the extra income from this until there is another rate case. So the justification, and you said it a little bit, is it's until the next rate case comes in, then the other ratepayers will benefit. Is that correct?
You are right. I mean, until that next rate case, they don't see the benefit. I guess they don't see the discount either.
Those are my questions.
I've got a follow-up question. In the you pointed out three different areas that this contract would cover, and the second one was you talked about take-or-pay provisions, and if I remember your language correctly, you talked about that would provide compensation if the project didn't go forward. I mean, do you have anticipation that you would be making a capital expenditure without knowing for certain if the project was going forward?
When looking at a project of this size, the dollars invested, we want to make sure customers are protected under all scenarios. We have no doubt this project is going forward, but we just feel like if we're going to come to the commission in a rate case in any future time, and if you were to look at this project and say, hey, what did you do to protect yourself? What did you do to protect customers? We want to guarantee protection of those customers. That's why we have take or pay. That's why we have letter of credit.
Additional questions?
One more follow-up question. On the public interest statement that I talked about in statute, would you be willing to, in writing, file a document that talks about the public interest and how this will, this contract of deviation is justified and will impact ratepayers?
Sure.
With that, Mr. Chairman, if you're ready for a motion.
Any additional questions? Yep, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, in EL 16-003, move that the Commission approve the contract of deviation and associated tariff revisions, I believe effective April 4 or 1?
April 1st.
2016.
Discussion on the motion.
You know, I spent a lot of time on this docket, and I really felt sorry for a new staff person dealing with this docket because it was more complicated than I expected. And I was glad that she had a team working with her because we always have to look at ratepayers, and that's what our job is. The contract of deviation really deals with shareholders. And so it's a shareholder issue until the next rate case. And so I really had to dig into that to make sure that the ratepayers were going to be protected in the future. I certainly appreciate adding a significant load to support ratepayers in the future and impact, hopefully, their rates that maybe you can stay out longer, number one, or the next rate increase will be much smaller because of the significant load. So thank you.
Additional discussion. I, too, have spent probably more time on this than I anticipated that I would spend, and at this point, I'm not prepared to support the motion. I have I understand the concept of contract with deviations when it's meant as a specific incentive to perhaps draw some business into South Dakota that wouldn't be here anyway. This business is here. And you've already, and they have already made the decision that you're going to be the supplier. And so I don't see an incentive involved with that. But what I do wrestle with and what I think has got me really hung up on this particular docket is the fact that, that Northwestern came to us and said, we want to increase rates on everybody else by 20%, but for this particular person, this particular company, we're going to leave those rates where they were for 3 years. And I have a real tough time trying to justify why. And we did. We raised rates about 15% on everybody else, but leaving this particular company at the old rate, I can't justify that. Commissioner Feagin makes an interesting point about the fact that at this point it's the shareholders that are either benefiting or not benefiting from the additional margin here. But the way I look at it, if we decline this particular contract, there is going to be additional revenue there that I see could perhaps forestall the next rate case. And I'm looking at everything I can to make sure that we forestall and keep those rate cases, push them as far down the line as we can so that we're not asking once more to increase rates on everybody else. And by denying this particular contract, I think we do that. We push that down the road for the benefit of everybody that's involved in your system. And so based on what I've heard here today, I don't know that I can support the contract. Additional discussion. Commissioner Feagin.
Well, to vote or to?
No, to discuss.
Excuse me. Yes, I wasn't going to ask questions on it, but I will now. Could you... Excuse me, every time I look at you, you look so much like my nephew, Matt, that I want to call you Matt. now, remember my question. Is there excess capacity, obviously, to provide to this consumer?
Mr. Lefebvre is on the phone. I will let him address that.
I mean, one would assume there is. You can't make an agreement if you don't have the capacity to provide it.
Commissioner, this is Blue Lefebvre. We are currently studying our capacity, but in the provisions under this contract, we either have the capability of utilizing capacity if we have it, or we have the capability of acquiring capacity in order to accomplish this. So in either scenario, the contract covers whatever Northwestern's need would be.
Thank you. And did you not testify and have confidential information here showing that you're making some money off of this? You're not losing money in providing this
That's right.
capacity, this generation, correct?
Right. This contract as a whole is not losing money. And there is margin from this customer.
Okay. So if you have excess capacity and you're making money off it, then it would seem to be, and you've negotiated and obviously competed with another company to provide that generation to this company. So I very much appreciate Chairman's concerns with it, and I share the similar concerns, but I think in this particular situation they're going to be making funds that would not harm the other consumers. Thank you.
Commissioner Nelson, if I'm out of bounds,
no,
just tell me.
Please.
I could respond to
Certainly.
A couple of your points. You said that this customer is here, this customer is already coming. When we made this offer back in December of 14, the customer was coming here, but we didn't know which provider that customer was going to choose. It was competition. It was us or the other provider. So we chose to provide this additional incentive to get them to choose Northwestern. We've had another customer about 10 years ago who was right next to our line, right in our territory. Everything made sense that they should have chose us, and they didn't. They chose someone else. And so in these situations, it makes us think, okay, we need to not take this for granted. We need to put forth our best effort so that we can gain this customer. And that's what we did with this particular discount.
And I guess I fully understand that, but as you've already testified today, on that same day, your company chose to file a rate increase request with us. They would not have had to do that at that point if you wanted to maintain your negotiating position. That was a choice of the company at that point. Mm-hmm. But thank you. Additional discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I think I was at your point when I first read the docket. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is, why wouldn't have they used the new rate? And so I spent hours and hours and hours on this docket and realized, okay, Northwestern did choose to file a rate case. But the Dakota Access hearing and their negotiations, you didn't know for certain all about that. And so when you were negotiating, you were in uncertainty. And Dakota Access probably needed a firm price. As you know with rate cases, sometimes you bring rate cases in and there's a decrease. We didn't know what staff was doing for sure as a commission until we saw the settlement. Northwestern may have known more than commissioners would have known, but there could have been a decrease, there could have been an increase. So the uncertainty when you made the negotiations, I understand that. I believe this load factor will impact ratepayers in the future. Right now, I believe this is a shareholder's issue. You're right, Chairman Nelson. If they make more revenue, maybe they could keep the rate case out a little bit longer. But without this, without being a customer, if you did not get this customer, you would be in sooner and would impact rates in the future. So hopefully, this load will impact our rates in a positive way and will keep you out longer and decrease rates or decrease your increase, I guess. But I understand what Commissioner Nelson is saying. I just have came to a different conclusion after much studying on this issue.
Additional discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes nay. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you as well.
That takes us to EL 16-004 in the matter of the filing by Mid-America Energy Company for approval of tariff revisions to its transmission cost recovery 2015 reconciliation and new factor calculation. Mid-America, whoever wants to take this.
Great. Thank you, Chairman Nelson. This is Jennifer Moore with Mid-American Energy. As staff points out in its memo, this docket arises out of the establishment of Mid-American's transmission cost recovery rider in Mid-American's last electric rate case in docket EL 14-072. This is Mid-American's first filing to reconcile the revenue requirement and rates associated with the first partial year of the transmission cost recovery rider, as well as this docket also sets new factors for 2016 as of April 4th. In this docket, Mid-American really appreciates staff's comprehensive review and patience with Mid-American. This is our first filing, and we needed to also file a supplemental filing on March 4th to provide staff with additional information. In this docket, staff and Mid-American are also in agreement with the revenue, the 2015 reconciliation and the factors to be set. But this filing also, under the statute, requires a customer notice. Now, Mid-American has already posted a customer notice in our Sioux Falls and Sioux City offices. And in this one, Mid-American is asking in our revised filing, Mid-American has provided a proposed bill insert or a bill message because one of the rule requirements is that notice be posted. But the rule also allows, if we do not mail individual notices to customers, that the utility could have a alternative publication. And so Mid-American has proposed that alternative publication to be the notice posted in the customer office. And so I think, you know, Mid-American and staff, or at least Mid-American, respectfully request you approve the reconciliation. The commission has options for the notice. Mid-American respectfully requests that we be allowed to just keep the customer notice posted in the office and not send out individual bill increases. And I should say the reason for that is the increase is less than 1%. And we're talking about, you know, this is a small electric footprint of 4,500 customers. And so we're thinking that the customer office adequately covers that. But obviously, it's up to the discretion of the commission to decide that. Now, with me today are Diane Knoll and Valerie Hansen and Naomi Chihura. So if there are any specific questions about some of the schedules that we're filed, they'll be able to answer those questions as well. So with that, I will leave the summary there and open it up for any questions or staff comments.
Thanks. We'll go to staff first and then go to questions.
Thank you. This is Eric Paulson for staff. Staff has reviewed Mid-American's TCR filing, including the 2015 reconciliation and the new factor calculation. Mid-American has responded to all staff's data requests, and as stated in the memo, staff believes this filing is consistent with the settlement stipulation approved in the last Mid-American rate case. So staff recommends approval of the revised TCR rates as listed in the memo with an effective date of April 4th, 2016. Staff also notes that it does not take a position on the waiver of the customer notice as requested by Mid-American.
Thank you. Questions from the commission. Commissioner Fegan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mid-American, you're asking for a waiver, but when I listened to you, it sounded like you're asking for a waiver of the proposed changes, those rules, on 2010, 13, 18, and 19. And you've already done that, so you don't need a waiver for proposed changes, or am I not understanding you properly?
I think there's a subtlety or a nuance in the rule there that the commission can direct Mid-American to send out mail bill notices. And if the commission doesn't do that, there's another option to post the publication. So somehow, you know, get the customer notices. And so we're simply saying we have posted those in the customer office, but we understand that the commission has the discretion to also require us to make a bill filing. So really, I guess what we're asking for is some clarification in the rule that we have approval just to post the customer notice and not send out those bills, either inserts or a bill message.
Thank you. I'm going to ask staff, and I would assume our staff attorney. It appears to me that MidAmerican has asked for waivers on proposed changes, which they have actually done already because they've posted. What I'm worried about is 2010-1601, the public information rule. On number two, each time a utility is granted an increase in residential rates, the utility shall furnish each residential customer affected by the change in the rates of comparison, and it goes on and on. So it appears to me they're asking for a waiver on proposed changes, which that's over, and they still need to adhere, and I guess my fellow commissioners can decide, but to my view, they still have to adhere to the individual notice to the customers.
Right. This is Kristen Edwards for staff. In their filing, when they asked for a waiver, it seemed inconsistent. They were asking for a waiver of one rule but describing another. So we weren't exactly sure what they were talking about. And I think early on we had some discussions with Brittany, too, to try to figure out what the history of that was. And I think we came to the conclusion they were looking at 2010-1601. And that information going out to the customers. And so I think that's what they actually wanted a waiver of, but we weren't clear on that. And I'm not sure whether or not that rule can be waived, and I'm not aware that the commission has done that in the past. So that's why we didn't take a position on that. Thank you.
Those are my questions, Mr. Chairman.
Additional questions? I have one or two. Essentially, I'm looking at residential for an example. The tariff rate is going to double. And so my question is, what's driving these MISO increases? I guess that's the first question. And secondly, are we going to see these kinds of increases in the future?
Yeah, Chairman Nelson, I'm going to let Naomi Chihura answer that question.
Yes, good morning, Chairman. Our understanding is that the increases that we are receiving from charges from MISO are largely related to multi-value projects, so they're regional transmission projects that we are being allocated a portion of. Only some portion of those are projects that MidAmerican is constructing. They are largely projects that are being constructed under MISO's approved expansion plan.
And the second part of my question is, do you have any feeling for, are we going to see a doubling again next year? Any idea what's coming down the pike?
I know there will be significant increases in the factor yet, as far as, I mean, it's a fairly small factor, so any increase looks fairly significant. I know over the next several years, we still expect this factor to continue to increase somewhat, but then probably level off somewhat after that.
Thank you. Any additional questions? If not, is there a motion? Commissioner Fegan?
Sure, I do have one.
Sure.
In EL 16-004, move that the commission approve the revised TCR rate factor and the revised tariff sheet with an effective date April 4th, 2016, and move that the commission deny the request for waivers.
Discussion on the motion.
I think we are finally seeing the multi-value projects increase, and although South Dakota is impacted highly with benefits of the multi-value projects, we do get to pay for it. And so we're certainly seeing that. I spent a lot of time on this docket, too, because I had to do a lot of research on public notice, and I think we have an opportunity, certainly, maybe to clarify that. But we have it doesn't look like we have any authority to give a waiver after the residential rate increase is given. So that's why I have asked to deny the requested waivers.
Additional discussion. Let me just add, I appreciate the motion and the fact that it does not include a granting of the waiver. I think we go down a pretty slippery slope when we decide that, oh, because it's a fairly small increase, customers don't need to know about it. That's a really bad precedent, one that I'm not willing to go down. I do concur, however, that the commission should probably review the rules and statutes that apply to these notices to determine if you know there's any practical level where a notice wouldn't be required. But to do it on an ad hoc basis, certainly wouldn't support that. Additional discussion.
I would just say that, if I may, Mr. Chair, that the law is specific and we need to follow the law. And so it's an appropriate motion. I thank Karen for her counsel. Excuse me, Ms. Kramer.
Additional discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. And thank you all and appreciate everybody from Mid-American being on the line.
Chairman Nelson?
Yes.
I'm sorry, this is Jennifer Moore, and I may be out of bounds. I just want to clarify, according to 2010-16-01, Mid-American does have notices that can either be mailed, put in a bill insert, or posted in the office. And so I think really what we're looking for is how do you want those notices sent to the customers? We have those three options. Mid-American's preference would be the proposed notice that we had filed just be posted and not sent in individual bills. However, if they have to be sent in individual bills, then we have an alternative bill message. And so I don't know if that triggers like another motion to direct the company in which option you'd like to pick.
If you could see, there's three commissioners that all have their fingers close to the mic button, but nobody's really sure. But Commissioner Fegan's finger is closest.
I think this is where the confusion lies, and our apology. But, yeah, you have that flexibility in 2010-13-19, and I think this is what we're really getting at.
So I'm going to ask that you work with staff. 2010-16-01, subsection 2, states, and when I stated my motion, I read that, it states that
right.
Every residential customer shall be furnished. So I'm going to have you, I would recommend as commissioners that we have them work with staff.
Okay.
And I would just say that from this, and I guess this is maybe just a little guidance for the staff that are going to work on this, from this commissioner's perspective, I think it needs to either be a on the bill or a bill insert and not simply posted at the office. Commissioner Hansen?
I agree with that. Yes, it should be with the bill when they receive it, and it can either be an insert or it can be written onto the bill itself.
Thank you. That really helps.
Excellent. I appreciate your asking for that clarification. Takes us to EL 16-010 in the matter of the joint request for service rights exception between West River Electric Association and Black Hills Electric Cooperative. And the question is, shall the commission approve the requested service rights exception? And West River, anything to add?
No. With the filing, we have attached a map showing the details in the area and the letter for authorizing Black Hills to serve the customer and the letter of consent from Jody Landwehr, the affected customer.
Thank you. Black Hills, anything to add?
No, we're in agreement to serve, so no comments.
Thank you. Staff?
Thank you. This is Kristen Edwards for staff. Staff has reviewed the agreement, which was more or less just in the form of a letter, but the operative thing is that it was signed by the customer. So the customer is aware of what's going on, and we do support approval of the request.
Excellent. Questions from the commission or motions? Commissioner Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, in EL 16-010, I move that the commission approve the requested service rights exemption between West River Electric Association and Black Hills Electric Cooperative.
Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. And thank you, gentlemen, for both being on the line and for working together on that issue.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Takes us to GE 16-001, in the matter of the filing by Mid-America Energy Company for approval of its reconciliation and annual report for 2015 and revisions to its energy efficiency cost recovery rate. Questions. Shall the commission approve the 2015 reconciliation amounts and the 2015 performance incentive? And shall the commission approve the changes to the energy efficiency cost recovery factors and tariff sheets with an effective date of April 4th, 2016? Mid-American.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Nelson. This is a little more straightforward than the last docket. Mid-American has had energy efficiency programs since 2009, and this is just a reconciliation of the 2015 dollars. And as the commission may recall, back in December, we had set the budgets for 2016, which in turn altered the factors for 2016, which is also what we are asking to be requested along with the performance incentive. And in that docket as well, the staff had reviewed the information. We provided them additional information, and we did update the gas factor to reflect the changes from the rate case and some of the cost of the capital. So that had an effect to slightly adjust the gas factors, and as staff points out, that was a revised tariff filed on March 11th that the company also agrees would be the tariff that we would file to implement with the compliance filing. So if there are any questions, with me today is Tina Yoder, Chuck Wright, and Naomi Chihara, along with Valerie Hansen and Renee White and Kate Simmons. Yeah, they're there to help with the math, because I don't think you want me answering those questions.
Thank you. We'll go to staff. Mr. Carney.
Thank you, Chairman Nelson. This is Darren Carney for staff. Staff filed a memo on March 28th regarding our position on this docket. We reviewed the filing. The company made minor adjustments and updated the gas tariff sheet. We agree with their revisions and would recommend approval.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? I've got one, I think, for the company. If I read all of this correctly, on the residential electric side, your spending was under what was budgeted, but the proposed tariff is actually increasing. First of all, is that all correct? And then secondly, that seems opposite of what it should be. And I think I know the reason for that, but can you speak to that, please?
If you give us a moment, we're looking through the numbers.
Absolutely.
Chairman, we're trying to figure out, because you also have to factor in what happened in 2014 as they kind of build on each other, and we're still looking, I guess, is my
yeah, update. Take whatever time you need. And when I said I think I know the answer, I think the answer is 2014, but I need you to confirm that.
Yes, and we're trying to find our 2014 numbers to confirm that it was the overspending in 2014 that kind of threw 2015 off. And so hopefully when the numbers net out.
While you're doing that, I'm just going to turn to Mr. Carney. Do you have any inclination on the answer? I mean, you can see where it's counterintuitive unless there's some issue that's hanging over from 2014.
That they had an under-recovery in 2015 but are increasing the rate?
Correct. Well, they spent under their budget in 2015, but they want to increase the rate, and typically that doesn't correlate.
The driver for that would be the budget for 2016 and what they estimated for recovery of that budget in the 3 months, where I think it was, January, February, and March. They estimated recoveries for the 2016 budget. 2016 budget is $108,550, and they recovered $15,000 through March for the 2016 budget. Remainder is $93,000, so you still have $93,000 of the 2016 budget to recover. And in 2015, the over-recovery was only $33,000, so you still have $60,000 to recover for 2016.
Okay, that makes sense to me. Mid-American, does that concur with what you might have found?
Yes, this is Cade Simmons with Mid-American Energy. Thank you for the opportunity. In addition to that, on page 2 of our reconciliation, Exhibit CE, you'll also notice that even though we underspent our actual budget, our actual expenditure in 2015 still did actually exceed what we recovered in 2015 in column E. So that also has an additional part to play. It's not by a large amount, but also the entire budget is not that large for our electric programs in South Dakota. So.
Excellent. That is the only question I've got. Other commissioner questions? Commissioner Fegan.
Thank you. True-ups are always interesting, and it's interesting to see the gas on residential. It actually is a negative factor. So actually we'll be getting credits on bills this year, which will be nice. Just a quick question, and I don't know if you can answer it today, but if I would be a customer of American or Mid-American Gas, what percentage of my bill would be approximately for energy efficiency? Not this year, because it's going to be negative, but, 2009, 10, 11, 12, approximately what percentage of my bill is for energy efficiency? And I understand there's true-ups and all those type of things.
We are going through, there were some bill impacts that are outlined in the staff memo, but we're going through our information to see if we have certain percentage. I know that we've calculated the impacts, but I don't think we've ever examined it in the context of the total bill. So if we can't find this shortly, I think that it may be something that we will file either later today or this week to provide you that information.
That'd be great. I tried to look at your 2008, well, probably 7 filing, 8, when in effect 2009. I tried to look at that to see if you had something, and I probably didn't look at the right places. If you had something that stated to customers, this is going to impact your bill by what? It appears to me it impacts my bill by about 6%. So I just wanted to know what you are kind of telling customers in the past few years. Thank you. You can file that.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions? Seeing none, is there a motion? I will move in GE 16-001 that the commission approve the 2015 reconciliation amounts and the 2015 performance incentive, and that the commission approve the changes to the energy efficiency cost recovery factors and tariff sheets with an effective date April 4th, 2016. Discussion on the motion. Simply say again, Mr. Carney, excellent memo, very, very helpful to us. Appreciate that. Appreciate the answers to the questions. All seems to be in order. Additional discussion. Hearing none. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. And thank you, folks, for being on the line. Brings us to PS 15-001 in the matter of the filing by Commission Pipeline Safety Staff for approval of a penalty for a pipeline safety violation by Humboldt Municipal Gas Utilities. And the question, shall the commission require additional information or how shall we proceed? We've had a filing, but nothing that would direct us in a particular direction, so I will simply open it for commission discussion.
Chairman Nelson, may I interrupt, please?
Certainly.
This is Brenda Haviland. I've been online since you guys started taking roll call from Mike Gary on, but I just want to let you know I am here.
Excellent. Thank you, and I apologize for not coming back around and asking that. Commissioners, Commissioner Fegan.
Sure. I have just a couple follow-up questions. First of all, thank you for the Humboldt Gas Board for being online today. I certainly appreciate your hard work in ensuring your operation is running safely. Ms. Zenter, you filed a list of completed trainings and highlighted the ones that were most important and great significance and importance. So, in your mind, do you believe that Humboldt's natural gas system is has no violations of PHMSA and has a qualified operator that can run the system safely?
Let me clarify. When you said that they have a qualified operator, I'm going to have to clarify that with the assistance of Crooks, they have qualified personnel to operate the system. Because at this point in time, they would still not be able to respond to emergencies and all of the events that could occur with their own staff. So they are relying on Crooks.
Okay. We talked a little bit about the stipulation on number 10, item number 10. So when I first read that, I thought the qualified operator needed to be certified. And maybe, I don't know, so I'm asking you. So maybe the staff meant that they're a qualified operator to maintain the system, but not necessarily certified in every item like paperwork and et cetera.
I guess the word certified, that's not really a word that we use. it's certified, I guess, gives me a different meaning than qualified. I guess they could be used interchangeably in the correct context, but so I think what probably what you're asking is the staff is qualified to do a number of tasks without assistance from Crooks, and they are working towards accomplishing the training and testing so that they are qualified to do all of the tasks. In the meantime, they are still relying on Crooks to assist with those items that they are not currently qualified to do.
Thank
Does that
you,
answer Ms. your question?
Thank you, Ms. Center. So am I hearing from you that you are comfortable with the maintenance and safety in the Humboldt natural gas system, that number 10 in the stipulation is adhered to because of the Crooks support, and that you believe, number 3, that you believe that no PHMSA violations are in effect right now?
That is correct. I don't believe there are any current violations. And I believe with the assistance of Crooks that they are able to maintain their system and operate safely.
Thank you. Those are my questions. I just wanted to ensure that you felt comfortable with the direction that Humboldt is going and that you were comfortable that they have qualified operators. Thank you.
If I could just ask Commissioner Fegan, I got lost a little bit when you're talking about certified. And line number 10, help me understand.
You know, I use the word certified because on number 3, it talks about required certifications. So I just assumed they kind of meant like a certified
qualified operator.
Gotcha.
So that's why I went to the word certified.
Okay. Thank you. Additional questions? Commissioner Fagan.
Is there any update on the hiring status of the full-time utilities employee?
Yeah, this is Mike Gary. Yes, there is. The City Council of Humboldt made a decision at their meeting on 328, and they have made a hire. They ended up choosing a local person that lives right here in Humboldt.
Cool.
And they have given notice to their current employer, and he'll be starting in approximately 2 weeks.
Thank you. I forgot. I have one more question. So staff, during this new hire, so Don Bowl is required to stay within 30 minutes or something of the system right now. Is that correct? Unless he... Is that correct?
I would say that Don is not currently qualified to address all emergency issues, and so they are relying on Crooks to address any items for emergency response.
So then that Crooks agreement, you will ensure that that continues until, even if this new person is hired, they can't get rid of that agreement. Is that correct? They have to wait until they have a qualified operator to run the emergency portion?
That is correct.
And then will you work on a time frame or anything on or work with them on training to ensure, I know we use as soon as possible, and that is so vague, because it sounded like you believed that Terry Hansen could be hired on an individual basis to help with training, or they could go out of state sometimes to do training. So will you kind of watch that training and making sure as soon as possible is not defined, that you're comfortable with what they're doing?
I will. One thing I want to say, though, is that just because a person gets through training doesn't mean that they have the skills and knowledge and ability to do a task. And so the qualification is really dependent upon the person's skills and the person's abilities, as well as just going through a training program. And I would say in order to have a person really trained well, it's going to be a 2-year process.
Thank you.
We've got three folks on the line from Humboldt. Anything that any of you would like to add at this point?
Yeah, this is Mike Gary. Just to address a couple of these issues, I met with Terry Hansen on with GTS on 318 and 322. We had additional training done here in Humboldt, and that training was to do some performance evaluations with Donnie Bowl and to bring Brenda Haviland on board also. She is in the process of going through the OQ training. And that's a positive thing for us. We have long-range plans that we would like to put ourselves in a position where we're at right now can't happen again. And we're also working with Terry Hansen to accelerate our training process going forward here. We're going to have this new hire coming on in 2 weeks. And Donnie Bowl, our gas utility employee right now, is very, very close to being fully OQ'd. And he is doing everything within his power to make that happen. And we're going to bring Brenda Haviland along as quickly as possible, too. And we're going to bring the new hire along as quickly as possible. And the way we're going to do that is, after talking with Terry, we're going to use one of his employees 2 days a month and try to accelerate this process and bring these people up to speed faster. Especially when you're working with people that may have very limited or no experience in natural gas, we need some extra time to bring them up to speed. And I think this is going to address that. I guess we'll find out. We'll see how much this does accelerate it, but I believe that it will.
Mike, thank you. I appreciate that additional information. It's helpful for us, and appreciate the effort and push that you've been making to get things back on track. Any additional questions, comments? Commissioner Feagin.
I just wanted to thank Mr. Gary again. He has, anytime we've brought up an issue, he has tried to address it by the next meeting. So I certainly appreciate what you're doing, Mr. Gary. Thank you.
Anything else? If not, again, appreciate the entire discussion and appreciate hearing of the progress that's being made down in Humboldt. And thank you, all three of you, for being on the line today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we will move to TC-16-003 in the matter of the approval of a wireline interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation doing business as CenturyLink and McLeod USA Telecommunications Services, Windstream KDL, and Windstream NTI for the state of South Dakota. And the question is, shall the commission approve the interconnection agreement? Mr. Topp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're asking for approval of this interconnection agreement, and I'm available to answer questions.
Staff.
Thank you. Kristen Edwards for staff. The agreement was properly filed, properly executed, and does not appear to contain any discriminatory provisions. No comments were filed, and we recommend approval.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Motions. I will move in TC-16-003 that the commission approve the interconnection agreement. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Brings us to TC-16-004 in the matter of the approval of a wireline interconnection agreement between Mid-Continent and Venture Communications. And the question is, shall the commission approve the interconnection agreement? Mr. Mastel, anything to add?
I have nothing to add, Chairman Nelson. The parties entered into the agreement. Open and honest negotiations were held. I'd ask that it be approved.
And just for the record, you are representing who?
Mid-Continent Communications.
Thank you. Any other? Let's go to staff.
Thank you. Kristen Edwards for staff. This was originally mentioned in a settlement stipulation between SDTA and Mid-Continent in a previous docket, so we were anticipating this filing and recommend approval.
Questions from the commission? Commissioner Feagin.
I do have a motion if you're ready.
Yep.
Or Mr. Hansen, I guess, is ready for the motion.
That's perfectly fine. Mr. Chairman, TC-16-004, I move that the commission approve the interconnection agreements.
Discussion on the motion. Hearing none. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Pat, thanks for being on the line with us.
Thank you.
The next regularly scheduled meeting will not be at a regularly scheduled time. It will be on Monday, April 11th at 1:30, right here in room 413. Anything else for the good of the order? Is there a motion?
Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. We are adjourned.